obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
It's good to be here. Just to let you know how exciting people are to have me here, there's a guy out by the pool who's been blistered for a day with sun, and his arms are blistered, his lips are bad, and he's laying out there, and one of the men that I sponsored told him, why don't you come on in? Larry's going to talk about sponsorship and home group. And he says, no, I think I'm good for one more hour, you know. And so they're just running in here. But I'm glad to be here. My sobriety date is May 2nd, 1982. And when I think of sponsorship and home group, those are the two most important things in my life. If there's anything that can be called bookends in my sobriety, it would be that. I believe Alcoholics Anonymous was come about by two little guys, a little stockbroker and a doctor, and they got together at Cyberling Guest House, as we all know and have heard, early in May. And Bob told Ann that I don't want to talk to anybody about my drinking anymore, and I understand that. He says, but because he may be a friend of yours or the family, I'll give the guys 15 minutes. And they wound up coming out of there about 4 or 5 hours later, and they had a moment. They had a moment, and Dr. Bob said, he's the first man that understands my drinking. And I believe that's been my privilege to experience that moment and to pass it on. You know, I started drinking when I was about 13, and you know, I didn't head out to Skid Row the next day and lose my paper out and come to the powwow or anything, but, you know, I found a safe spot. And I've always been looking for a safe spot, you know, and drinking allowed me to be whatever I needed to be, and just the sense of ease and comfort and the sense of well-being that came from drinking, I pursued it into the gates and sanity and death and beyond, because it was the safest place that I knew, and I could avoid all responsibility, which is something that's always made me thirsty. Facing responsibility. My dad wasn't like that. My dad was a World War II vet, hard drinking guy, you know, and he used to tell me, you don't know how good you got it. And he read my inventory at 11 years old, because I've never known how good I got it. You know, I got to be beaten half to death today to be reminded of the good life that I have, you know. And my dad was one of those guys who, you know, when times would get tough, he could reach down and work through things. I'm not like that. There's nothing in me that says, let's work through this. You know, I was born with a 5-inch belt of lazy ass. And, you know, and the only thing I think about when I wake up is, when's my nap? You know, there's nothing about working through any. See, I'm a loser. I'm a loser. I've always been a loser. And I prided myself on that. And I perpetuate that with my little blanket of self-pity all of the time. And when you're a loser like me, you don't work through things to get hope. Losers like me, the only way I get hope is I start over. Because there's nothing like the feeling of a fresh start. A new little town, a new motel, a new probation officer. You know, and you know, everything's good for about 60 days, you know. And by the time in 1975, I was... just released from a nut house, and I ran out of Thorazine, and they found me in Alvaro Street after a couple months, curled up behind the Chevron gas station like a dead dog, and they arrested me, and it was an easy catch, like that, you know, net them, you know, it's sad to see a guy like me try to run away, you know, just, and so they sent me up to Wayside again for about, oh, I guess it was about 60 or 70 days. And they put a bunch of us in a black and white bus and sent me to the South Bay Courthouse, where I'm going to be tried and sentenced to 2 years in the penitentiary. And after about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm in this holding tank about half this size. I'm on a concrete floor with a bonds bag and no hope. And I'm wondering where everybody's at because everybody's gone. All of the buses are gone. All these other guys are gone. And at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm just wondering where they're going to send me now because I'm always going someplace, it seems. And a Scottish man with a patch opened the jail door. And he said, "Aye, lad." He said, "Are you Larry Thomas?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I am." And he said, "Come with me, son. You're going to AA." And I thought, "My God, what's AA? You know, I've heard of OR and PO, but what's... here's some new initials for me to study, you know. And what's AA? And who's this Scottish pirate all of a sudden, you know? Aye, lad, you know, looking for his parrot, you know. But that man took me in 1975 to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was ready for a long ride up north and maybe some lunch, you know. And he took me for a 15-minute car ride to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1975. And he rolled up to this dingy, stinky, filthy, rotten, disgusting Torrance Lomita Alano Club, you know. And he started introducing me to all these goofy people. You know, everybody had a nickname and a tattoo, you know, and their big deal was to get a cup on the wall, you know. And started introducing me to Indian Genie and Captain Bob and Tennessee Bill and Singing Sam and Serenity Sam and Biker Ray and Santa Claus, all these, you know, Whistling Butt, and and this little lady named Moose come running across the parking lot, and she says, "Hi, honey, my name is Moose. I'm expecting a miracle." "That you are." I said, "I'm not it, you know." And some transvestite came out of the card room. He starts circling me like a helicopter in Norwalk, you know, and he comes walking over to me in his new moo-moo, and he says, "I can't wait to take you to our candlelight meeting," you know. And I said, "I don't think so, you know. Not till I get my first year anyway, you know." And I thought, "My God, if that's AA, I don't want any part of this, you know." And from 1975 to 1982, I came in and out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to say I came in and out of AA, but I hadn't touched it. What I did was what I'd done my entire life. Since the time I was 13 till the time I was 30, I sat in rooms from the state or the city or the county or whatever, government, and sitting in rooms waiting for people to do something for me. I've had my hand out my entire life. And nothing was to change when I come in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I'm not drinking, I'm stuck in a little mental case called delusion. I'm stuck in a life of delusion. It was about 2 or 3 years ago, me and my sponsor were over in Oklahoma and we were in a book study. And we were reading about this delusion, and it dawned on me that every time I talk about what alcohol did for me, filled up the hole, made me big, made my feet big, did all this stuff, you know, that it wasn't really happening. But to me, it really was. To me, it was as real as rain. And I pursued that delusion into the gates of insanity because it was the safest. I didn't know. And every time I come to AA, I would suffer from that delusion that I see some folks doing today, that if they stopped drinking and get a normal life going, everything would be all right. And if I could get my life together, everything would be... And I was sure that was my case. And if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, what I was waiting to be done to me, God was waiting to do through me. There's a miracle here. And that miracle takes action. Something miraculous happens to people like me when they put this program in there. The whole purpose of this book, it says, lack of power is my dilemma. Not lack of alcohol. Lack of power is my dilemma. And the main purpose of this book is for you to find that power. And why do I immediately think it's going to be out there? When every Monday and Wednesday and Thursday, I'm sitting right next to it. I didn't know that. If you're new in it, because I've always come here to get something. And if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, there's nothing to get here. I mean, look around you. Yeah, I mean, there's nothing to get here. You know? There really is. A little sunburn, maybe, you know? Yeah. There's nothing to get here. The only thing you're going to get here is be prepared to be divinely inconvenienced for the rest of your damn life, you know, because it'll be the longest thing you ever do against your will, you know, which is why it works so good. I had to do the uncomfortable to get comfortable. And every time I called Alcoholics Anonymous, this little bald-headed carpenter would come and get me, Don Adamson. And in 1980, I'm over there at the Don Hotel over there in Wilmington. On the fourth floor, I've got a pint of whiskey, and I'm watching Jeopardy so I could really feel like an idiot. Every now and then, I get one right, you know, and Donald Duck, you know. And Don coming, I go, my God. I said, who is it? He says, it's Don. I says, my God, it's that guy from AA. I didn't even call him, and he's coming over, you know. He says, can I come in? And I said, yeah. And he opened up the door, and he said, oh, my God. He said, you had 15 days. He said, you're going to be a janitor in the city of Lomita, you know. There's some hope. You know, and I took a shot off of that little bourbon bottle, and I told Don, he was starting to tell me about it, and I took a shot off of that bourbon bottle, and I said, Don, I said, I don't want what you have. I don't want what you got. And if I ever get that bad, I'll know where to go. Just get the heck out of my room and let me do what I want to do. The cry of this alcoholic for my entire life, let me do what I want to do. That it'll be a cold day in hell before I get another man a cup of coffee. It'll be a cold day in hell before I set up a meeting and get some literature. It'll be a cold, and I tell you, man, amazing what happens in the middle of May, how cold it gets, man. And the moment that I said that, the only answer I ever knew left that little motel room, that bald-headed carpenter. And for 2 years, I was stuck with the memory of you. I couldn't get you out of my mind. Stay drunk as long as I could, stay sober as long as I could. Because the only thing that not drinking ever squeezes out of me is this silly idea that maybe this time it'll be different. But in my case, it came in the words of, what's the use? What's the use? You've been sober before, you know? And I had no idea what was going on. But on May 2nd, 1982, I found myself at another mission in downtown Wilmington. I went by a Woolworth window. I was 120 pounds. I was yellow. And I looked in this Woolworth window. And I've always been dodging reflections and mirrors and stuff. I don't want to look at the disgusting man. And I said, my God, whatever happened to my dreams? You know, and I realized I didn't have any. And I did what I always did. I had a little bundle of AA cards tied in a little string. And I went through them. And kind of like Bill going through the directory, nobody would answer, you know. And there was this one little card, and it was Don's. And I called that South Bay Alano Club. And who picked it up? It was old Don. I said, Don, this is Larry. I'm down at the mission. I'm ready to come back to AA. Will you come and get me? And he told me the most profound thing I've ever heard in my life. He said, no. He says, you know where we are. You know what we got. He says, why don't you get your rusty ass down here yourself? I'm tired of chasing after. And he hung up. I said, my God, whatever happened to that AA love? You know, and I just heard it. And for the first time in my life, it was up to me to come to you. And I didn't rush over there right after that phone call. I went around a corner in the backyard of this little mission, and I started crying because I knew I was going to drink again. I knew I was going to drink again. I knew I was like a tail on a kite, that it was just a matter of the wind hitting me, and I was so afraid. And I came to believe at that moment, and I didn't come to believe in God at that moment, and I didn't come to believe in the book or a sponsor or AA. But what I did come to believe in was the hopelessness and the futility of my life at that moment. And I knew it would never change. Those were words my dad pounded in, you're never going to change. And they came so true, you're never going to change. It's always going to be like this. And I was so afraid of that. And I was so afraid that it was going to take me on another run that I just didn't want to go through. That I started walking down Wilmington and Pacific Coast and Anaheim. And I walked to that stupid, dirty, filthy Alano Club. And I walked up to that little Montana cowboy. And I asked him something I ever asked a man in AA. I said, I don't know what to do with my life. Would you be my sponsor? And the guy looked at me for 5 seconds, and he said, and he lit up like a chandelier for about 5 seconds, and he lit into me for 20 minutes, you know, and told me under no certain terms was he going to put up with my nonsense. He says, I'm going to tell you something. He says, this is how me and you are going to operate. He says, you make the effort, I make the effort. You don't make the effort, don't bother me. I've been watching you for years. I've been picking up your slimy body. And he says, you know, I'm not going to waste my time. And I fell in love with a guy. There is nothing like that first sponsor. There is nothing like it. There's nothing like the second one either. But there's something happens. I think it's the most precious relationship an alkie can have is sponsorship. Because it ain't based on none of your nonsense, none of your material success, nothing. It's based on one alcoholic talking to another. That's one thing he made clear at about my second week in that mission. I was taking a bus because I had my license taken away at 17 and I wasn't going to drive. So I'm always taking a bus. It's hard to be a lowrider when you're on a bus. You know what I mean? And you're never on time for appointments. You're 2 hours early or 2 hours late. There's none of this, I'll be right there, you know. And I remember I missed my bus to the morning meeting. And the deal was that if I got to the club and made that morning meeting, I was to go look for work and meet him at the evening meeting. That was the deal. And then he would drive me back to the mission. I missed my bus. I come strolling into that meeting about a half hour late. I sit down. And he gives me the mad sponsor look. You know, and looks at the watch, you know, and I pretend to have one and look at mine, you know. And I thought, you know what, man? This guy is full of, you know, here I am for, what, 3 weeks? I've been at this thing on time every morning. Do I ever get a, hey, that's, you know, you're doing great. Get nothing. I miss a stupid bus and I'm a half hour late. And the old cowboy is going to get Sparky in the Spurs with me, you know what I mean? And I came up to him. I said, you know what, I want to talk to you after the meeting. I said, this is bullshit, you know? He looked at me with his little face, you know, and after that meeting, I was all, because all through the meeting, I'm getting ready. And I came up to him at the end of the meeting. I said, you know what, I said, I'm really tired of this look you give me, you know? I says, don't you know that I've for 2 weeks, and he reared up, looked like my German Shepherd dog when she caught that possum the other night, man. He looked at me and he says, you know what, pal, let me tell you something. Backed me into a wall. And he said, I've been watching you for several years here, sliding around here. And he says, I'm your sponsor. I'm not your friend. I'm not your connection. I'm not nothing like you've ever met before. And he says, if you come into this damn meeting and your nose is sunburned, I want to know what beat you were at. And then he walked away. And I got it. I got it. This thing was not up for debate. This wasn't something that I was a haggle about. And what was to happen to me is it became easier to listen to this fellow with no debate. And me and my sponsor shared a good couple years together. And then for some personal reasons, we started drifting apart. What happened to me is I became somebody, which I know doesn't happen out here in Palm Springs, but, you know, in Torrance, there's a lot of folks that become people, especially if they were on the streets for a long time, you know, and they get their first set of Goodwill clothes, you begin to, I'm doing all right here, you know. And people used to tell me, my God, you were down there and now you're here, my God, you know. And I really started believing that crap. And after a year and a half, I started judging my sponsor. The man that saved my life was now being criticized by me. That's him at me now, probably. Gonna electrocute me from down there, I know. Montana heaven, you know. And I started judging them, and I started keeping secrets, and I started running my own life, essentially. And then about 2 years sober, a man came down to that club because I had a little speaker meeting, and I started getting people from outside of Torrance, which really lightened up the meeting. And a lot of folks from the Big Book group of Bellflower came down. And on my second birthday, Don invited my sponsor, my now sponsor, and he came down there, and he talked, and he told me in front of everybody what I was. I was an AA pimp. I was a loser. Now, he didn't say that, but that's what I heard. And after the meeting, he says, you know, there's a triangle in AA, Larry. It's called homework and play. He says, I hope you find it. And the man took off, and I asked my sponsor, Don, about this. And he says, you know what? I think this is just the place for you to go. And Don drove me to the Monday night meeting in Belfast.
And he didn't even slow down. He just
kicked me out, you know what I mean? And brought me into that room, and I asked Johnny, same thing, I don't know what to do with my life. Would you be my sponsor?
Yeah.
He just thought about it for a long time. Said, yeah, let's give it a shot. You know, and he gave me certain things to do. And,
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
I think the thing that has saved my life is that he's refused to treat me special. And when you come into a big home group like this, one that I come from on Monday night and Wednesday night and stuff, I'm not a big, let's get in there and mingle guy. You know what I mean? And he knew that, so he stuck me in the kitchen making coffee. That was 30 years ago. I'm still in there. You know, every now and then I'd look out, you know, but he refused to treat me special. And I would walk into that Monday night wanting to be a part, and Johnny would have all of his guys. And they would all be in a circle. And it seemed like their backs were toward me. And they were huddling around and, you know, trying to figure out what they're talking about, you know. And it was obvious that he loved them better. I could see that. I'm an easy read. I know what's going on. Every Monday I walk in there, same huddle. I'm looking into it, you know. And Johnny would take off on the weekends. And I would call one of these guys that he loved a lot. And he said, you know, Bob, how come Johnny loves you better? He says, oh, Larry, he don't love us better. He just known us longer. You know, he says, it's just a matter of time, the old man. You know, just need to get to know you. Don't worry about that. You're part of the group. Just do your commitment. A couple of weeks will go by, and we'll take off to Sacramento or something. I'll make another call to Ray. Ray, how come Johnny loves you better? Jesus, Ray, he don't love us better. He just known us longer, you know. And quit trying to seek his approval. Wow. That was something that I'd done my whole life. Trying to seek people's approval, especially ones of authority who got the goods on me, you know. And it dawned on me, that's the worst thing I could do is try to seek a sponsor's approval. Because when I'm seeking your approval, I seem to hold back certain items, like the truth and secrets. And he knows I'm a goof. That's the last thing, that's the last guy on the world that I want to seek who's a goof. That's the one where honesty plays everything in this relationship. And it really saved my bacon. And it's amazing because now, 30 years from there, I get these calls. He goes away. And these guys that he sponsored call me up and they say, Larry, how come Johnny loves you better? That's just because you're a loser. You know, I earned mine, buddy. You know what I mean? But I had an amazing experience the other night because of sponsorship. I am not blessed with the power of choice. Something happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't longer have the power of choice. My book talks about that. And that includes sponsorship. I don't have the power of choice. Something happened to me as a result of these steps. Something that happened to Bill instantly. And for years I used to think I was supposed to get the big light in the window and the blinding flash and all that. But two paragraphs down from that, in that story, it dawns on Bill why he's still laying in that bed. That maybe I better work with other alcoholics. And I've come to believe that maybe he's hoping that happens to me gradually or quickly, that as a result of these steps, I become inspired to carry this message. And something's happened to me where I don't have the choice to sponsor people. My life depends on it. That's one thing that Don told me. I came away from that meeting of about 2 months sober, and he seen I had the long face, and he knew I was comparing myself to people who were materially doing well. For people who come to the podium and they talk about their charmed lives. And there you are with, you know, maybe a quarter or something like that, wondering when God's going to strike you charmed, you know. And he says, I know what you're thinking. You're sitting in these meetings and you're surrounded by success. Everywhere around you, look, people are successful. He says, I understand what you're going through. You'll always be surrounded by people who are successful. But he says, you better never forget this. You didn't come to AA to be successful. That's not why you're here, is to be successful. He said, you came here to be useful. Don't you ever forget that. Don't you ever forget what it's like to have nothing and still show up to your meeting and still have commitment and still recreate this atmosphere. See, that's what this thing is all about for me. It's about perpetuation and preservation. That's what we're doing here. Something's happened to us. We all had a moment. And because of our sponsors who are trying to get us to have this thing happen, I believe that's what my sponsor has done with me. He's given to me exactly what has happened to him, and he wants nothing more for me than to get the benefits of this book. He wants what.
And so we started our first convention.
I'm not some kind of guru here or something like that. If I haven't gone through something, I'll find somebody that has it. I can't sponsor folks on medication. I haven't had that experience. But I've had the experience of telling some guy to get off it, and he goes nuts. And his doctor called me up and said, you know, you better tell him to get back on it. I don't want that. That's way out of my league there. And so all I have here is to share my experience, strength, and hope. What we used to be like and what has happened. You know, and I'm sitting around here at my little sponsorship meeting a couple weeks ago, and this is just an idea that I had, that I wanted to get together with some guys that maybe I didn't even sponsor and maybe take them through some traditions or something like that. And the other night we're over at Travis's in his garage. And I got these guys with 8 days, 8 months, and 8 years. And we're reading that fifth tradition. How important that is. And it is amazing that the thing that happens to us as a result of the 12th step, that in the fifth tradition they reiterate that. That's your primary purpose. And our primary purpose is to make sure we have a place where that can happen. And there was no other place that spoke volumes to me than my home group. See, when I think of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't think of New York or Akron. I think of the Monday Night Bellflower Big Book group. I think of the Wednesday Night Pacific group. I think of the Thursday Night 12 and 12 in Long Beach. Because that's where sparks fly. That's where people carry this message. That's where our primary purpose is obvious, because you can hear it in people who visit it. And once you've been to a home group who has that spirit of enthusiasm, whose primary purpose is to carry the message, you always have a reference point whenever you go anywhere else. You'll sit in these meetings where it looks like they're Kincaid paintings, you know, and you realize that you really have something on Monday and Wednesday and Thursday. And how important it is for you to take care of that. How important it is for you to have commitment and make sure this thing is still vital. You see, because when I was new, and I know like some folks in here, some of the most important information and examples of Alcoholics Anonymous happened to me when I was new. Were said to me when I was new. Little things that people did. Little handshakes they gave me. Little things that they told me to do. Are so monumental. And yet, where do I get off telling somebody anything any different? Oh, you don't have to do that. Let somebody else make the coffee. You know what I mean? That's not what they told me to do. You know? We get enough of that with people who are sitting in meetings who are telling people, oh, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. You're just one of those gurus or something. You know what I mean? I'm surrounded people who are enthusiastic about it. There's nothing sadder than to see people in Alcoholics Anonymous come here and hang around people who don't do AA. And they try to blend in with their old buddies. And then, I don't want no part of that. Everything I need has been found right here. And ever since I met my sponsor, we started making some amends. And we started getting in this book. And my sponsor told me one of these 6 years sober, he said, seek ye first the kingdom, huh? I'm not a Bible reader. Every now and then I'll be in a hotel and I'll look at that thing, you know, Gideon, who is he? You know, and seek me first. And isn't that amazing? Put all your efforts into staying sober, Jonathan. Put all your efforts into staying focused on, and the rest of your life will take care of itself. But the moment you start pecking around with your personal life, and that becomes more important than where you're supposed to be, your life will be a soul out of whack. And I tell you, there's why my home group is so important, and why a routine of meetings is so important, because I've experienced that there's nothing more scarier than to be sober and crazy and wonder where you should be tonight. Let me see, should I go here? No, maybe I'll just stay home and work this shit out. You know what I mean? And you know, I mean, you've already been in there a week. What the hell's another day, you know? But it's been my experience that there's nothing more secure than to be sober and crazy and know that I got to pick up Daryl in 2 hours and go to the Wednesday night meeting. Nothing. I experienced that early in my sobriety. They gave me a routine. My home group and my sponsor gave me a routine of meetings to go to. And then I was on my way. I knew where I was supposed to be and everything. What a sense. And then one day I got the smart. You know? I'm going out there. It's a Monday morning. I'm going to start the old plumbing truck. You know what I mean? And it dawned on me. I'm not going. It's Monday and I ain't going. I don't know where it came. I just don't feel like going. I've had a good stretch here, and I've been consistent, go to the potlucks. I don't feel like going. I had a busy weekend. I just came from Monterey with my little girl. I ain't going. And man, that worked on me all day. By noontime, I was happy as hell, man. I said, gee, did Jimmy crack corn, and I don't care, man. I ain't going, you know. I'm happy about it. I don't make my morning call. Johnny calls me up. He says, how you doing? I said, I'm doing great. He says, really? He says, am I going to see you in a couple hours? I said, no, I ain't going. I ain't going, and he hung up on me. I ain't going, and I was still happy about it, man. Come Monday, right after work, I'm all jazzed about not going. I find myself in the shower, shaving, in the shower, getting ready, going to a meeting that I'm not going to, you know what I mean? Shaking hands with people, and it dawned on me that my feet were trained, totally against my will. They're not smart. Stupid, but my feet were trained. And even though, and it used to be like that with Eddie's liquor store. You know, and there I was, shaking hands with people that I couldn't stand, giving them rides home, you know, and it was amazing. And I found a little bit of power in that. And I found through all these years that people like me, I don't have the ability to come to believe. I don't have that in me. And what has happened to me because of a sponsor and a home group is I came to serve a power greater than myself. I came to serve a power greater than myself, and eventually I began to believe in that power that I was serving, because I could not deny my eyes. I could not deny the fact that every time I was with you, no matter what was going on in my life personally or around me, that the moment that I sat with you somewhere during the tradition, somewhere during the beginning of the meeting, it all began to go away. And I was so glad that I was with you. And I found power in that, and I found peace in that. And I wanted these guys to have that. I couldn't wait to introduce guys. And then around 6 years, seven years, I started drifting. I started getting a little delusional, thinking that my personal life needs attention. I started dating this little girl, and I told my sponsor, he says, I don't think it's a good idea. And I said, well, I don't think you understand the nature of our illness, you know. And a couple weeks later, and I told Johnny, I said, I'm going to move in with this lady. He says, son, that's a terrible idea. I said, you don't understand. We're doing pretty good here. Larry, I don't think that's a good idea. And after 2 weeks, I moved in with her. And I began to ride the worst train in my life, because now I had to be right about a situation he knew was wrong. And I couldn't tell him anything in my life, because he would always allude to the fact, well, if you weren't with her. So I had to avoid that. And for 5 years, I became absolutely out of my mind. Oh, I was going to meetings, but after I left you, I was a loon. Take off my AA face, and I couldn't hold a job. I was holding back on my child support. I was going to pick up my little baby girl, and she had holes in her underwear. And that's my fault, because I can't hold a job. The because I need that money. I don't need that money for anything decent. No, I need that money because I'm obsessed with massage parlors. My Johnny's, you know, he's at the front door with Ray, and they love to greet people. I mean, when you come to the Monday night meeting, you're going to be greeted. We got a 50 people greeting line. I mean, it's so long they hand you water so you can make it through, you know what I mean? And, you know, he's always sniffing for drunks, and I'd come in there and he'd be sniffing for baby oil and powder to make sure I was all right, you know. And finally, we talked and he said, why don't you put all your stuff, because things began to be violent. And he said, why don't you put your little things in your bond bag? He knew I didn't have a lot. And he said, why don't you come on home? And I came on home. And I came home and I got back to my primary purpose. And I haven't left since because I know what it's like to be away from home. My home group is my home group. And why I call it my home group, because it's like our home. And when you come and visit our home, we don't ask our guests to clean up the bathroom. We do the chores so that anybody that comes to our home group, if they're new, the chairs are up and the coffee's made and the books are out. So that all you have to do if you're new is maybe sit and listen to the sweet voice of a loving God that expresses himself in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And maybe you'll identify. Maybe you'll have your moment. Maybe you'll think that maybe I can do that here. What a safe place that is. I couldn't get that from not having a sponsor. My greatest prayer in my life is to make sure that I never waste my sponsor's effort. I don't want to be that. I don't ever want to waste his effort. I don't want to be one of these guys where the torch is being passed and I want to play hot potato with it. I know what this thing means to them, and I know what it means to you, and I feel so privileged to have that luck. A man asked me not too long ago. He says, I've watched you every Wednesday. He's visiting from South Carolina. He says, I've watched you every Wednesday. You sit where you sit, and he says, do you have any regrets not ever meeting Bill and Bob? And I thought for a quick second. And I thought about my Wednesday night meeting. And I thought about who I sit in front of. And I said, I don't have any regrets. Not one regret do I have. I am where I'm supposed to be, with who I'm supposed to be with. I'm in the safest place I know with my sponsor. And I try to give that to the men that I sponsor, because I don't want them to miss a thing. I don't want them to miss a thing that this program has to offer. Alcoholics Anonymous is one drunk talking to another. And how blessed we are. How blessed we are to sit next to a guy in a sponsorship meeting who 6 months ago couldn't see. Totally blind, this guy is. And now he's in our greeting line, trying to find your hand. You know. He took a 6 month chip. Son of a bitch can see. Yeah, he can't see in front of him, but he can see stuff on the side. He can see lights and visions. We're at our sponsorship meeting a month ago. And we all have to read a paragraph out of that book. And it would come to Danny, he would pass it because he couldn't read. And they would give him tapes to listen to and everything. And I'm proud to say that at our last meeting, the book was passed. Danny grabbed it. And he put it in front of his face, and he had this big light and this magnifying glass that the Braille Institute gave him. And he had that little instrument here, and he had that book right there. And Danny began to read, and the room was silent. Right, Greg? And he said, rarely have we seen a person fail. And the guy read it unbelievably. And I damn near missed it. I damn near missed that. It don't get no better than that. It doesn't get any better than that for me. When my sponsor was there when my father died, first thing that my sponsor said 2 weeks later, because every Thursday, me and my dad would have chili. That was our day. That was my amends to my dad. Johnny told me, why don't you get to know this man? Why don't you have lunch with him every Thursday? And every Thursday, I would take out my dad, and we'd have chili at Norm. And I wouldn't know what to talk to him about. And we started having chili and talking and stuff like that. We began to be good friends. And on a Thursday night, he died. Thursday afternoon, he died, about 7-8 years ago. And got us stuff together, and I said to myself, okay, AA, do your stuff. I'm not going to tell a soul but my sponsor about what happened, about my dad dying. Let me see you feel this way. I'm not going to tell a soul. And I went to my 12 and 12 on Thursday. Nobody knew but my sponsor. And one by one, everybody that I sponsored started coming up to me. And they started talking to me about those black guys. And that loud wife. And those bratty kids. And one by one by one, that hole was replaced by my primary purpose. I knew my dad was in good hands. And now I knew I was too. That I was just as safe as he was, as long as I get back to my primary purpose. Thank God for sponsorship. I always give you that that nudge back into the mood, you know. And it makes me very proud to have a home group. It makes me very proud to have a sponsor, and it makes me very proud to be able to pass that on to men and hope that they get what's been given here. And that maybe it's not like a way station to some folks, but it's just a place for them to stop and get help before their next move. Maybe there's some folks who are like us, whose life depends on me and you being here, whose life depends on that message being carried. And I'm very privileged to be with you. And with all the due respect that I have for my grand sponsor and my sponsor, if you're new, all I have to share with you is this. Please, this weekend, take off your hat and coat. I think you're in the right place.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.